And good morning. Thank you for taking time from your weekend and this Saturday morning to spend time with me on the radio. And the phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. This program is Health Essentials. A lot of times I read things that just completely get my attention. And I think to myself, oh my goodness, does anybody know about this? Am I the only one that reads these things? Well, you know, I tend to ask questions of people when they come to see me. And one question this week was a woman that had just a very, very challenging health problem. But I asked her, I said, so when you went to the doctor, what did they do to examine you? She said, they didn't do anything. They went straight to the prescriptions pad and they wrote down a drug or medication. I said, well, did it solve your problem? And she said, no. I'm in the same boat I am than what I was about a year ago. And so that just kind of gets me to thinking. Have we really lost our ability to kind of think through problems? What do you do when your body is not working right? God has designed these symptoms that you have that are very uncomfortable. Sometimes it's in the form of pain. Maybe it's in the form of chronic fatigue that won't resolve and go away. Maybe you've got something come up on your skin and you don't know what to do about it. Well, these are all warning signs and clues that something's gone awry. Now, I came across this. This comes from, well, I can't find my source now. Anyway, I came across an article concerning a type of a skin cancer that's just most dreaded. It's called a melanoma. And you'll hear the punchline in just a moment, but it's just, I mean, you would never guess this otherwise. Okay, let me read this to you. And I realize you don't have melanoma right now, but you may know somebody that does. And so you're going to tuck this away in the far reaches of your brain, and you're going to pull it up when you need it, all right? Okay. Cutaneous melanoma is a malignancy of pigment-producing cells located predominantly in the skin. Although this compromises only 3 to 5% of all skin cancers, cutaneous malignant melanoma accounts for approximately 75% of all the skin cancer-related death. I know that's negative, I'm sorry. The other type of skin cancers that probably come up are squamous cell carcinomas and basal cell carcinomas. I think we agree that nobody wants to have skin cancer. They go on to write that with early detection, surgical excision is the standard of care. And if you've ever seen someone that's had a surgery to remove a malignant melanoma, you know they don't just lightly go around the edges of the cancer. Oh, no. They go deep and they go long and they try to remove every root they can find or tentacle and cut it out. And so you can tell that a person's really been, you know, carved on when it comes to that. So with early detection, they can just easily surgically remove it, although the excision's quite large at times. However, once the tumor cells have metastasized, that means it's spread from its original location to another part of the body, then the treatment options are very, very limited. I mean, you don't have a lot of options to explore. So what they're finding out now that there's a tremendous resistance of these melanoma cancers to chemotherapy. They just don't work. And so they're trying to think outside the box and come up, what are some new ways, what's something that's novel that we haven't thought of before that we can use to treat melanoma that might have like a strong anti-cancer property. So there's a large volume of clinical studies that report beneficial effects of medicinal herbs. Yeah. So when people report what they did to help themselves overcome a melanoma, these are things that come up. Now, you may not have a doctor recommend these things to you, but what do you do with a human being that says, I know for a fact this was a benefit, so they're coming out with more studies, which I find very interesting. So I just want you to consider for a moment, maybe the most, and there's no maybe to it, the most original form of medicine in the universe is going to be plant-based medicine or the use of herbs. Go back to the book of Genesis. You'll find out what did people use when they tried to change this or that or help themselves. It was what was found in nature. It wasn't like a chemical. So if you want to help your immune system function better, if you want to have a higher quality of life, if you want to give your immune system and your body a chance to overcome an issue, you may have to consider using plants that God has made. Now, I know if you go into a large store that sells home repair supplies, or, you know, like a Home Depot or Lowe's, something like that, you're going to find a company that produces a chemical used to kill a plant called dandelion. But what I'm going to suggest to you is they've got the whole thing completely wrong. Boy, have they missed the boat. So if we're talking about herbal medicine or holistic medicine or natural medicine, there is a flower called the dandelion. And dandelion is very, very good at gently detoxifying the body. What that means is we live in a fallen world. We're exposed to more chemicals and more toxins than all our ancestors put together. A lady was telling me that this week that she'll be going to Great Britain. And she says there's a kind of a walk down by the beach where she's going to go and visit. And she says she'll have it all to herself because nobody uses it. I think she called it the promenade. But she said the water is just absolutely dirty and filthy. I said, well, what's in it? And I kind of thought to myself it'd be like Galveston, where there'd be balls of black tar from like an oil spill. And she said, no, it's just bits and pieces of plastic. And I thought, great. What a way to kind of poison our oceans is with the plastic. But anyway, back to dandelion just for a moment. Dandelion has this very unique anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, and anti-angiogenic property. You may not have heard that word before, angiogenic. But the word anti-angiogenic means it inhibits the growth of brand new arteries and vessels that supply tumors with their fuel or their food. It just has very high anti-cancer properties. And I came across this one article right here. They're trying to come up with some way to treat the body because chemotherapy is failing. You're not going to have a doctor tell you that, but, you know, just look around and you decide if that's the route you want to take, or do you want to be your own best advocate and do something to help yourself. So now they're proposing that dandelion root extract represents a promising chemotherapeutic agent. And I'm thinking to myself, really? They're calling dandelion root chemotherapy now? Well, I guess it depends on how you look at it. Because number one, it has this unique action upon a tumor to deny it its blood supply or its fuel. Well, isn't that what you want? Don't you want to choke or starve a cancer to death? Yes. It also has this very interesting ability to selectively induce what's called apoptosis. This is just normal programmed cell death. So when a cell is at the end of its lifespan, it's done all the good work it's supposed to do, it's supposed to go ahead and die. And when it dies, your body can replace it with a brand new healthy cell. Or it can divide one last time and make a daughter cell to replace itself. But dandelion root has been shown to do that. You may not like the taste of it, but I promise you, there's good things that can begin to happen to your body. A lot of times I think if someone shows that they have a significant amount of fluid and waste in their system, and we want to gently kind of scrub that out, dandelion root is one of the easiest things that you could use. And so now they're showing in studies with melanoma cells, which is just a wicked form of a skin cancer, that dandelion root helps the melanoma cells to die, but it preserves your healthy cells. See, if you take a cup of dandelion tea, or you take the herb dandelion root in the form of a capsule or a tablet, it doesn't do one thing to harm good, strong, vital, healthy cells. No. And so once you use dandelion root, it has this unique ability of helping the melanoma or the cancer cells go ahead and commit suicide. This comes from Substances That Fight Malignant Melanoma by Ollie Lee Vere. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, if you want to join me on the radio this morning, there's a phone line officially open if you have a question or a comment. The number here is 903-586-5257. Now, this is one more unique piece of information. You're not going to just find this anywhere, but I got this from Dr. Jonathan Wright. And Dr. Jonathan Wright, he writes about a lady by the name of Maria Bell. She's a medical doctor. Now, this is something that she recently wrote about. And if you will, I want you to just prayerfully, thoughtfully consider this. Well, let's go to the phone lines first, and we'll come back to this article. It's real short. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. Praise the Lord. Hallelujah.
Yay. All right.
Look, I'm enjoying this weather.
Oh,
Dr.
my
Morgan,
goodness, yes.
I'm outside now in my pajama bottoms. That's cool. Hey, Dr. Morgan, I want to ask you about diabetes. Do you know anything about that? Now, when blood sugar is low, a person gets really weak and faint and everything.
Yeah.
And what happens if the blood sugar gets high?
Well, then you have a different set of problems. When blood sugar starts to become high and elevated, do you have a number in mind, or do you want me to just make up one?
No, let's see. 290.
Okay. Now, here's what I want you to understand. Your body is supposed to use sugar as a source of fuel, but your body can also use fat as fuel, or it can use protein. But if sugar is available, then it won't really burn fat or fuel. But when sugar starts to go up to 290, that means you've got a major fuel delivery problem. So most likely, at the very least, this person that has blood sugar at 290, they have what's called insulin resistance. See, there's a master control hormone in the body secreted by your pancreas called insulin. And insulin is like the key that goes into that key slot on the door of your car or your pickup. And once you turn the key, it unlocks the door so you can get inside and get to your truck and you can take off and go to work or go to the grocery store. So when blood sugar's too high, that means your body says, oh my goodness, we've got way too much insulin. And see, technically, the only way that you can increase your lifespan easily is by lowering insulin levels. So when insulin levels are too high, your body says, we cannot shove or cram any more protein or any more sugar in our cells, and so they become resistant to it. So that would be called type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is when your blood sugar goes up even higher than 290. It could hit 450, 500, 600, no problem. But at the same time, you're losing weight like crazy because your body cannot use the sugar at all because you have a total lack of insulin.
Okay.
So, have you been diagnosed with either type 1 or type 2 diabetes?
No. Jesus Christ is my God, my doctor, and I don't have anything. I'm good. I'm good as far as I know. I'm healthy. I'm not calling on behalf of a friend of mine.
Okay. And well, at 290, I mean, this is going to be a disaster waiting to happen. This is not going to play out well, so we've got to find a way to turn this around. But the ball's in your friend's court. And so one of the ways of doing this is you've got to lower the insulin, the blood sugar levels. And one technique for doing that that's proven to be very accurate and very reproducible, and it's free, it doesn't cost a thing, it's called intermittent fasting. When people eat just two meals a day, and they can put those two meals in a feeding window of about 6 to 8 hours, that's where you start to change and reverse all this.
Okay. Two meals a day.
Mm-hmm. And if you can put the two meals together or back to back, that's the best strategy. Instead of, I'm going to have a big breakfast, then when I get home at 8 o'clock at night, I'm going to have a huge supper.
Uh-huh.
But if you had like lunch and supper, or breakfast and lunch, and skip supper or skip breakfast,
uh-huh,
that's what seems to work the best. And see, as a person starts to see improvement, that's kind of supposed to encourage them to kind of press on and keep going and try to improve themselves, because ultimately, if your friend could, I don't know if they can, but if they could start walking every day, walking has been shown to reset those insulin receptor sites where they can be more responsive. Otherwise, this person, they're going to be put on a drug called metformin, glimepiride.
They've already got her on some kind of insulin. She's having to take insulin and stuff, and then they upped her dose or something. It's a pill form or something, and she said it worked good, but I was wondering, I was thinking, well, what, she's asked me, what can I eat? I said, well, have some Twinkies and stuff like that.
I know you're joking. Twinkies, I think those were outlawed 20 years ago. Here's what I want her to consider. If she eats low-starch vegetables, let me say it this way, and this might be a little bit better sales pitch for you. One of the problems with diabetes is they have a problem with minerals. They don't have enough of them. But usually, if I could convince a person to eat one really good, high-quality green salad a day, then that will be the base of minerals that their body requires and that they need.
Okay, that's good.
And so if she had a big green salad, she can make it any way that she wants.
Uh-huh.
But adding olive oil to it, that enhances the absorption of the nutrients.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Usually meat and vegetables are the way to go. The hardest thing on her situation is if she eats grains and sugar.
Because she was complaining. She was saying that pasta turns into sugar, like spaghetti and like egg noodles and stuff like that.
It really essentially does. She's right.
Okay. Well, I guess then she's on the right track, because she pretty much knows. I certainly thank you, Dr. Morgan.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for
calling. I was wanting to talk to you sometime, since I were talking about melanoma. It has to be malignant to be bad, though, correct?
Well, the term malignant means it's spread from its original location to an organ like the liver or the lungs or the brain or somewhere else. But a melanoma is the bad one. You don't want that one. So even if you had a small melanoma, you've got to take that very, very seriously. You try to get it taken care of before it spreads.
Okay. One other thing, and then I'll let you go, Dr. Morgan. You're a busy man. A sebaceous cyst.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an oil sac kind of that. Mm-hmm. Kind of
that's
clogged
right.
up, great.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I had one time, and it was looking bad, and I kept mashing, and usually oily substance come out that smelled musky. Well, finally, I mashed it so hard one time, it got really sore. The next time I mashed it, a bunch of stuff came out. I mean, it was like terrible, like spaghetti strings coming out.
Yeah, anyway, I hope nobody's eating breakfast right now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Anyway, but it went away, and I praise the Lord and thinking thanks for that. And but it's come back, but it's hard. Now I can't even do it. Nothing comes out of it, and nothing.
No, it's probably formed a true cyst now. It's kind of walled off and it's hardened.
So I just have to have it lanced and removed.
Maybe so. And one point that I can make: anything that stays chronically inflamed in the body, your body's going to calcify it. So you tend to, if it doesn't resolve, you get these hardness that forms.
Okay.
So yeah. it may have to be excised or lanced.
Okay. All right. Well, what about a woman? She's bleeding tea tree oil, and she wants me to put tea tree oil on my toes for like toenail fungus or something like that, and I was wondering, would tea tree oil, would that do anything to put that on that sebaceous cyst?
Yeah, potentially it could. I mean, probably a few weeks ago, maybe more like a month, I had a whole program devoted to the use of honey for skin infections and skin problems. But it does have a very gentle drawing effect, and one of the most famous honeys is called Manuka honey, and that comes from the tea tree plant. So it has some unique compounds that the honeybees picked up on when they go visit the tea tree.
Okay, well, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's something you can think about.
Okay, Dr. Boyd, I thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for your phone call. Hope you have a great weekend, buddy.
You have a blessed day.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Thank you much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Love you. Bye.
Isn't he sweet? Just a simple point. Any time that a person has a condition called macular degeneration, that occurs for one reason. If you do not deliver enough oxygen to the eye tissue, then your body responds by growing brand new blood vessels to try to deliver, in an attempt to deliver more oxygen to the eye. The problem is that those new blood vessels, they grow over the macula, and then a person has blindness. What is the number one reason why a person has toenail fungus? You're probably thinking, how are these two connected or related? Well, it's a lack of oxygen. So anytime you have toenail fungus, the solution is more oxygen. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Enjoying the cold weather.
Cool weather. I love it. Feels good.
Yeah, it feels great. A couple of questions. I'm having a grandbaby in November, and we have been asked to get shots, the flu shot and the whooping cough shot. Any way around this?
What do you mean that you're asked to get shots?
Yeah.
By who?
The parents and the doctors. It's all out on the internet that it's recommended that anyone coming with the baby should
have. So the grandparents can't be around the baby unless they get whooping cough and the flu shot?
And the flu shot. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what do you want me to say?
Is there anything natural or any way around
it? Well, those are two different questions. Actually, we have three conditions right here. Number one, are you telling me, do you have to oblige them and get all the vaccines just because they say so? Well, the answer is no, you don't have to do that. I know what they want. The other question is there anything natural? I'd say, well, yes, of course there is. But see, here's the problem. They don't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to see it that way at all. I told a person yesterday, we were talking about infections, and I told them this article that I've been reading, and I've read it like three times, but they were saying, where is the most likely place for a healthy person to pick up the most wicked infection that will literally eat their body and it will resist every antibiotic treatment known to man? Well, that's the hospital. Yes, exactly. And so there's two locations in the hospital where you can pick those up that are pretty much a given, that if you just, you know, start running your fingers all over everything in these two locations and you touch your nose and your mouth and your eyes, you're going to get something. So where would you guess in the hospital would be the most likely place for you to pick up a antibiotic resistant infection?
The waiting room and the bathroom.
There you go. There you have it. You figured it out. So right there at the start of the ER is a good location, and then any bathroom in the hospital. So what do? Mm-hmm. You avoid those.
Mm-hmm.
But see, what they want to say is, let's have the baby in the hospital, and while you're here, we want you to have the, I know I'm going backwards here. Dr. Hugh Funderburg, from John Hopkins University, the medical school, he's written more articles on this topic than probably anybody that I know of. But in 1998, he was interviewed, and this was the question the interviewer asked him. They said, is there any connection between the flu vaccine, the number of flu vaccines, or meaning if you have three to four consecutive, so if this is 2016, you get a flu vaccine in 2016, then another one in 2017, then 2018, and this year 2019, they said, what is the rate of occurrence of people developing Alzheimer's that get three to four consecutive flu vaccines? And without missing a beat, Dr. Funderburg said 7 to 800% increased risk of Alzheimer's. I thought to myself, do they actually come forth and tell people this? See, I'm not going to walk by the table in Walmart where you've got the five nurses lined up there saying, get your flu shot today for $35. I don't stop and argue with them. No, that's not my job. I don't want to create the scene in public. But I think that thought every time I walk by him,
mm-hmm.
that when you take a flu vaccine, I know everybody's cringing right now when they're listening to me talk about this topic, but I'm going to suggest to you there's something much, much different. Number one, what if we had a very robust, efficient immune system that could do its job and prevent diseases from occurring, or be able to contend with a flu infection or something like that? And so one of the most natural remedies of all time is just called elderberry.
Mm-hmm.
Elderberry is a plant that God has put here on the earth, and these berries come off of it, and sometimes they use the stem and the roots and the leaves, but I think the berries are the most common source of the remedy. But elderberries, they have very unique yet potent antiviral properties. And so there have been studies where they show if someone's starting to come down with the flu, if they will take elderberry a little bit every day, they get over it probably, what, 8 times faster than somebody that doesn't. So that's one thing you could think of right there. The other remedy that's easy to come by, and I know this one is a mouthful, so I apologize, but it's just a homeopathic remedy for the flu. It's called oscillococcinum, and you can get that at almost any store. And so the key is you take that exactly at the moment that you start to come down with the flu. Go on to the next topic now. The studies on vitamin D3, which sometimes is called cholecalciferol. This is a fat-soluble vitamin. So when you're out in the sunshine taking care of your sheep and your goats and playing with your dogs, walking across the pasture, natural light from the sun, the ultraviolet radiation, strikes your skin, and it starts to make this transformation of cholesterol into a form of vitamin D3. But from there, it goes primarily to the kidneys, where that total transfer or the complete transformation is made, and you have, voila, vitamin D3 in the kidneys. But the studies on vitamin D3 show that when it's low, you are most vulnerable to the flu or a viral or a bacterial infection like whooping cough. And so having optimal levels of vitamin D3 is really, really critical. I know I sound like a broken record with what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I think that people need to hear this, because they just don't hear this very often. What are the two most common symptoms of lower levels of vitamin D3? It's going to be fatigue that never goes away and having some continual pain inflammation that just never resolves. Does that make sense? So sure we've got does. We've got elderberry, we've got oscillococcinum, we've got the use of vitamin D3. All these things have remarkable studies behind them to show that they help bolster the function of your immune system. There was a study done with men that were playing poker at a table. I know you don't want to hear this because it involves gambling. But what they did was some of the men, they tied their hands to the table where they tied them, or they restricted their hands with these cloth or rope reins just so they couldn't touch their eyes or nose while they're playing cards. And so they purposely played poker with men that had the flu. These were sick men, so they all had the same cards. And they showed you could not get the flu if you did not touch your mouth or your nose or your eyes or your ears. It's not going to happen. So just remember that. So if you have to go to the hospital to visit somebody, you wear rubber gloves. Don't touch anything and throw them in the trash on the way out.
Gotcha.
So I don't know. No, technically, that is the hospital policy. You're at the mercy of it. So if you want to go visit the baby at the hospital, you have to decide, is it worth it for me to get a flu vaccine, or can I just wait till the baby's out of the hospital? I don't know. I can't tell you what to do. I'm so sorry.
Gotcha. Elderberry, how much is recommended?
Well, in this study, they didn't use very much. I don't really remember, but I think it was close to like 1 teaspoon a day, which sounds like kind of a pitiful little amount.
Yeah.
I know what I would recommend to you. If you said, Dr. Morgan, I feel like I'm a little bit off and I'm coming down with something, I would say, sister, let's hit it and hit it hard. Maybe I'd do like a teaspoon every hour on the hour until we knocked it out.
Okay. And as a preventive, a teaspoon or two a day?
You know what a woman told me last week? She said, these two kids of mine, and I don't remember their ages, but I know the first one was 4 years old, and the little girl, she might have been 2.5 or 3, but that doesn't really matter, does it? She said, Dr. Morgan, these kids were sick all the time. They would catch everything that comes along. She says, but for the last year and a half, I give them a elderberry gummy bear. I guess it was a gummy bear. No, I didn't see it. But she said, I give them these gummy chews one a day. And she said, they hadn't been sick since. I'm going, oh, my goodness, maybe I should listen to what this mama is saying. She didn't have sick kids anymore. But, yeah, you could do that. And I realize this is not like a concept that everybody wants to think about, because you're going to get some people say, oh, my goodness, that's so dangerous taking a little bit of echinacea every day, or how dare you take elderberry every day. I just don't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
We are living on a planet that has bugs that have learned how to resist antibiotics, You know what Clorox bleach is?
Yes.
Have you ever heard of Lysol?
Yes.
So when I was in college and I was in the microbiology lab, this is what we used every single day to sterilize, to clean, to disinfect, to kill bacteria. Guess what? It don't work anymore. Even bacteria can get around Clorox bleach and Lysol. Can you believe that?
Wow.
I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah.
And so the very things that I used 35 years ago when I was in the microbiology lab to stabilize the countertop or my work area and all the lab equipment, it doesn't work anymore. That means bacteria can thrive quite well in an environment of bleach and Lysol. But formerly, it used to kill it. So we got to come up with strategies that work a little bit better. So I'm becoming a fan of what's called white distilled vinegar. I'm pretty sure it kills every virus known to man.
Really?
It does. Better than anything made by man. But it goes to show you, what God has designed has not been improved upon to this point in time. And I am pretty sure it's not going to be improved upon. Because white vinegar is a little bit more complicated than bleach is or Lysol. See, I read an article. I'm sorry. I'm making you think that I read an article. I did not. I read two paragraphs from an article that was talking about all these chemicals that are in the hospital that are used to treat infections. I'm sorry, to clean countertops and doorknobs and mop the bathroom with. You know what? They don't hold a candle to hydrogen peroxide or white vinegar.
How about alcohol?
How about white vinegar and hydrogen peroxide?
Okay.
No, but so if you went to the health food store today and you said, I'm looking for a potent elixir for my immune system, the lady or the man might take you over to an extract called elderberry extract. And so you've got two options. It can be preserved in glycerin, or it can be preserved in alcohol. Now, I'm telling you my opinion on this.
Mm-hmm.
I think the glycerin is much, much inferior and weaker. Now, that's not meant to offend anybody, but there's some people, they just can't tolerate alcohol, and I respect that. But if it's not that big of a deal, always get the one that's preserved with alcohol. That's the one that retains the vital life force and the potency. So anytime that you're trying to get the job done, use the alcohol base. It's hard for it to spoil, I'll put it that way.
Yes.
Has a much longer shelf life, too.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Once you open once you peel that metallic, I don't know if it's mylar, metallic plastic seal on a bottle of hydrogen peroxide, I really think from what I've read and studied and used, my own experience, I think it has a shelf life of maybe 3 months.
That's all?
Yep, that's all.
Oh,
now,
wow.
If I'm wrong about that, if you have one that's 6 months old and you want to see if it's still good, you could pour a little bit down the sink and see if you hear that white.
That's
actually
ugly.
No, I have a different plan. Just squirt some in the mouth of one of your animals and see if they start foaming at the mouth. That would be that
or,
way.
or throw up.
Yes, that why. But you've seen somebody pour hydrogen peroxide over a wound or a sore.
Oh, yeah.
You see that foaming action.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it.
So, no, I know where you're coming from, and I just apologize, but there's no easy answer to your question. What do you do if they demand that you have a whooping cough vaccine and a flu vaccine just to come to the hospital? I don't know what to tell you. I'm so sorry.
Well, this sounds very good. Can I ask one other question?
Of course, Kim.
If you're low in vitamin D, and I tend to run low, I have to take supplements. Is there something in the body that is causing you to run low?
Well, if you have, and this is only a concept, so just take it with a grain of salt. Some people, I find, that their systems or their immune system revolts against wheat. I'm not trying to like it. So if a person eats wheat and their body doesn't like it, then that could be one potential explanation why their vitamin D runs chronically low. The other explanation would be the kidneys are not so strong.
Oh.
Because the kidneys are where 95%+ of all vitamin D3 is made. That's it. It's not made in the brain. It's not made in the lungs or the heart or the intestines. No, no, no. It's the kidneys.
Anything you can do to strengthen that?
Well, white sugar and carbonated beverages are probably the hardest thing on the kidneys that I know of. And when you start eating more green vegetables, I think you give the kidneys like a vacation. The kidneys are the one system. You can't outlive the kidneys. You know what the lady told me today? I won't tell you what company she works for, unless you want me to tell you it's a kidney dialysis company, but she was saying they pay every doctor $1,000 just for a referral. And I thought, are you kidding me? She said, no. We do it all the time. I said, explain this to me one more time again. She says, we encourage all doctors to send people for a dialysis, and if they do, we give them $1,000 for a referral fee. I'm going, okay, I think I see how this works now.
Wow. Okay.
So, do you know why I really said that?
No.
Here's the reason. If your mindset is, oh my goodness, here's a person in kidney failure, I better send them over right away for dialysis. You see, that's a much different perspective than, you know what? The name physician in the Greek means teacher. So what I want to do is I want to sit down today and I want to talk to this person and give them a strategy and a plan. What can we do to turn these kidneys around where they can heal and you can repair? But I can tell you right now, after doing this for 30 years, you're not going to find one nephrologist. Well, you might find one that really believes it's entirely possible for the kidneys to heal and to restore their vitality and get back to work again like normal. They just don't. But they believe in dialysis.
That's right.
And so whether it's you or me or someone else, I don't think I like the idea of sitting down in a chair for 5 to 6 hours a day getting dialysis, even if it's just a few times a week. So
wow.
if you walk every day for exercise, I know you do. Would you believe me if I told you that walking barefoot has been shown to improve the function of the kidneys?
Yes.
You would believe that?
I would.
I've been practicing it.
Even in the cold weather.
Oh wow, you're one brave woman. I tried to convince a man the other day that since he lives on 4 acres, he should just put on his loincloth and grab his spear and be like, David, go look for a lion to grab by the beard and smite. Could you explain how that worked? How did David grab a lion or a bear by the beard and then smite it? What was that like?
I don't know.
Neither do I. That's incredible. But I believe it, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what? Earlier I was talking about the use of dandelion root and its ability to help aid with a very wicked form of a skin cancer called a melanoma.
Mm-hmm.
But dandelion root, if you had one cup of dandelion tea a day, that helps your kidneys function better. I'm not going to ask you if you love the taste of it, because not everybody does. It's kind of an earthy, rooty flower. But it's so good for you. I mean, you just have to weigh out. What do I want here? Do I want healing to take place? But if you have consistently low vitamin D3 and you've tried sunbathing and you've tried doing various techniques and taking them, but you're still low, there may be a conversion problem. But for some people, it's because they're eating wheat and their immune system doesn't agree with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That makes perfect sense for me.
So just consider that. And you know what the solution is? You could try 6 weeks with no wheat and see if your vitamin D just goes right back up to an optimal level.
Would yeast be a problem also? Because I definitely feel yeast.
What do you mean by that? You mean like a yeast overgrowth like candida?
Oh, I didn't ever think of that. No, it's more like fluffy bread does not agree with me.
Oh,
like a hamburger bun does not agree with me, but rye bread does.
Okay. Okay, I'm with you.
I don't bloat from rye bread, but fluffy bread, as I call it.
Fluffy
bread. I bloat.
That should be the name of the new bread company they start here in Tyler. The Fluffy Bread Company. Hey, I've got it. Instead of crispy cream,
fluffy.
Wait a second. Yeah, instead of crispy creams, we'll call them fluffy donuts. How about that? Actually, I like the term flaky. Well, that's probably taken already. But no, there. I think the basic issue is when you have, you know what unleavened bread is, don't you?
Yes.
Okay. If you tolerate unleavened bread, but, you know, obviously they have to add yeast to start to produce. See, the yeast, they feed on the sugars or the starches, but they give off these gases like carbon dioxide and other things, and that causes the bubbles of gas to be trapped in the bread and makes it rise or blow up like a balloon. But, yeah, there's something to that. So that's interesting. That may be a factor, because there are some people, they are just more sensitive to yeast and yeast byproducts.
Yes, beer, wine.
Yes, beer and wine, that's right.
No good.
Which I know this is probably a total waste of time, but there was an article that I found kind of intriguing. I do not drink beer. I don't. I'm not judging a person that does. I'm not judging you or casting stones if you drink wine or beer. That's just not what I'm going to do. But they were talking about some research, and one little article that I read probably about 3 or 4 months ago, how they were just adding oxygen to beer, and it was causing very, very significant improvement in the function of a person's kidneys. Of course, that always gets my attention when I read about anything that improves the kidneys, but you see, your kidneys, they have these highly specialized sensors, or oxygen sensors, or blood sensors. And so one of the keys to life is you got to have oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to have oxygen. So when you eat a raw green salad, do you think that has more oxygen content than a Pop-Tart does?
Let me think about that.
Yeah, think real hard on it. Yes, you're right. And so your food choices make a difference in what you do every day. That's why I was trying to say earlier, if a person has very significant toenail fungus, that is part and parcel to very low levels of oxygen in the human body. Because that's where yeast and fungus grow the best, where there's low oxygen.
Amazing. You're amazing.
Well, God's amazing. He's the greatest. He's the master designer of all this. That's one of the reasons why eating living raw foods are so good for you, because they're replete or filled with oxygen. You've got to have oxygen. I don't know if you remember me reading that article about Mo Farah. He's this world record-holding gold medal Olympic running racing champion. I want to say it's like half marathon and marathon. He's just like, he runs like the wind. But they were showing that if they gave just beet powder extract to these people, that they could go longer before they were fatigued. That means more oxygen. So anything that increases the production in the human body of what's called nitric oxide, that gets more oxygen to the heart and the brain, and so your performance is better. Your mind is sharper. You don't have cobwebs.
And I used to take that.
And those are things that are very, very good for the kidneys and good for the blood. So consider those things thoughtfully, and that would be good.
I shall.
But you know what? I'm so happy about the grandbaby. Is it going to be a boy or a girl?
It's a little boy.
I think you need to have the doctors certify that they've had the whooping cough vaccine and the flu shot first. Because I've talked to many people in the hospital that say, I really don't want that myself. I don't mind recommending to others, but not so much for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, no, thank you very much for your phone call today. I wish you the very best, and congratulations, the new baby.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open. We've got plenty of time. The number is 903-586-5257. Good morning, and how are you today?
Good morning. I am wonderful.
Oh, good. I love the sound of this.
You started to mention about too much Candida and stuff. I've practically down to just rarely do I ever come across wheat or something like that. Mm-hmm. But whenever I do, I used to take what it's called Aquaflora Phase 2,
mm-hmm.
and they don't make it anymore. So whenever I do get into wheat or somebody put, you know, is there something else that I can take or do, or what would you recommend to help? Because I also have another friend that she is just, I mean, she sees the word Candida and she gets it.
Oh, whether bless, she's oh, eating bless it or her not, heart. Goodness.
She's just horrible.
Well, let me ask you a question. You were taking the Aquaflora because this was like a probiotic supplement, and you could take it and let the probiotics eat the Candida, right?
Well, I didn't know it was a probiotic, but yes.
Well,
yes,
my if it says flora, most likely it was a very specific blend of living bacteria or probiotic. Have you ever heard of the word probiotic? If you break it down, pro means promotes, and biotic means it promotes life. So, you would probably agree that we have more bacteria that live inside of us than we have cells that make up our body. Or if you haven't heard that, that's true. Now, to try to answer your question, the first thing that kind of popped in my head is I thought, okay, what do I normally see day in and day out that works? And so there's a type of a probiotic yeast that's called lactic acid yeast.
I've heard of it.
Okay. And so here's an idea. If a person knows they're going to be in a situation where they're going to come across maybe a lot of starches or grains that's been fermented and they don't want to have a candida problem, what if we did a preemptive strike and we took some lactic acid yeast before they ate the food? Now, normally this stuff comes in the form of a round wafer and you can chew them up or you can grind them up, but I don't think they taste bad. But if you chewed up this lactic acid yeast wafer, while it comes out of the bottle in the wafer form, to me, I always think of it, the yeast, it's actually a living yeast, but it's in a state of deep sleep or suspended animation or in a coma. I just made the last one up. But this lactic acid yeast, it's not really in its active form, but when you chew it up and it comes in contact with the moisture and the secretions of your body, it wakes up. And so this particular yeast, the lactic acid yeast, it does one thing really, really well. I mean, really well. If it comes across any candida anywhere in the human organism, it eats it for you. That's what you want. It doesn't eat the good bacteria like Lactobacillus acidophilus or Bifidobacter. It doesn't do that. But it goes after any... Yes, it just... I mean, this is God's design. It's just brilliant. It eats anything that doesn't belong that could harm you or your friend that you're talking about. So there's a lot of people. I just put them on 1 to 2 bottles of lactic acid yeast a year, and that keeps everything working great.
Wonderful. She has started ketogenic, and she is just, big change on her. It doesn't take but just a heartbeat of something, and she's real delicate on her system on anything.
But see,
like
I'm
that.
Proud of her though because she's trying to help herself.
Oh, okay. Well, you're proud of me too.
I'm proud of you
what
too.
I'm doing.
No, I am. That's awesome. See, I think it's good that you're really curious about that. But just consider getting. And lactic acid yeast is not expensive. It's one of the cheaper probiotics. But I'm telling you, sometimes that stuff can work wonders. Now, I know this sounds a little bit crude for a Saturday morning, so please forgive me. But that's one of the first things I think of if a person says, Dr. Morgan, every time I eat a meal, I have so much gas, I could probably power a locomotive. And I'm thinking, okay. But lactic acid yeast is one of the easiest ways to, quote, cure that and get rid of all the fermentating microbes in the body.
That might be what's happening with me. I went out of town and I wasn't for sure what I got into, and like you said, don't want to say too much for Saturday morning breakfast time, but my
thank you
my plumbing has changed quite a bit. But oh man, you talk about
something upset your system, didn't
pushing it? Yes, it did. it's helped in one way, but in another, it's like, I'm having to be so careful as to what I eat, yes. especially when I'm out in public. Girl.
Well, and I don't want to put you in a delicate situation when you go sit on the front row of church tomorrow morning. We don't want to have any emergencies during the middle part of the sermon, right?
Nope.
Especially when they start talking about the River Jordan and the Red Sea and all that water. We don't want to talk about that. But if you will, just look into that one thing that I told you called the lactic acid yeast.
It's just, I will.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. I've found just great benefits from using it.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I hope you don't think that I'm trying to overpromise that this is a cure-all for everybody.
But with
this unique situation, I'm so intrigued by you using this to see if you have just a great result. I'd love to know.
I'll let you know, and I'll let you know about hers.
And what we'll do is we'll wait and take it after church services and not before church services.
Yes.
No, thank you for your phone call.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Who, me? Sabotage someone? Oh, no. No, 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 no. I'm sorry. 903-586-5257. Good morning. Thanks for your patience and your phone call.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I'm a horrible person today, aren't I?
Oh, no. No. You're helping a lot of people that don't want to talk about it.
But you know what? At least she was willing to call on behalf of herself and her friend. That was really sweet. Yes. That means she loves her.
That's right. That's right. Well, I'm calling on behalf of my precious grandbaby. She's 2 years old, and she has hand, foot, and mouth disease. I know we don't have much time left on here, but...
No. Let's cover that topic real quick. One of the, and I kind of alluded to this earlier in the program, so I guess it's just like I'm alluding to that again. There is an herb called elderberry.
Yes.
And elderberry has one of the very, very best antiviral properties of any plant. And the good news is we can give it to a 2-year-old, and it's very safe, and they can make it taste good.
Okay.
And that story that I told you from last week, the mother told me, she said, my kids were sick all the time with viruses, and once I gave them these, I call them elderberry gummy bears. I don't really know if they're shaped like a gummy bear, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
But so this is a way that you can help the little girl's immune system function much better. The other thing that I would do is I would use what are called probiotics.
Okay.
And those are so easy to come by today. If this was 20 years ago, you might go into a health food store and go, do you have any probiotics? And they might look at you and say, what are you talking about? Are you talking about kefir or yogurt? Is that what you're talking about? But now you can go in there and give those, and these greatly help modulate the immune system. But if for kids that age, it's really hard to beat elderberry. Now, another thing that might be kind of hard, but it does work really well, there is a root or a spice or an herb called ginger. And a lot of times when kids get a viral infection, I find that ginger is very helpful just to go ahead and move that virus right on out of the body.
Oh, okay.
But usually, like with elderberry syrup, it's going to taste kind of sweet. And I know it's kind of shocking the amount of either honey or sugar they put in that, but I'm telling you, it's like a winner.
Okay.
And I think that would be very, very safe.
Okay, good. I actually called the health food store here, and they suggested colloidal silver.
That's fine with me also.
Okay.
And see, that was what was used 100 years ago when people had colds and the flu. They used colloidal silver. I think it's great. But I'm kind of particular about that in that I like 10 parts per million. I wouldn't use the mega doses of it, but I think that's just fine. But the reason that I like elderberry very much is because this little girl, she has an immune system designed by God, and elderberry is a plant that helps improve how that functions, how it responds to a virus.
Exactly.
And so if you want to ask me, are viruses living or are they dead, I would say, that's a really good question, because they can't replicate on their own. They have to steal everything from this little girl's cells in order to reproduce themselves. So I think elderberry is very, very safe and very good.
Okay. you know, she is just miserable. My daughter said she has the blisters on her feet, other parts of her body, and her mouth. And it's just,
well,
they're both exhausted.
Well, bless, oh my goodness. If I just start thinking about that for a little bit, I bet you mama's tired, daddy's tired, all the siblings are tired, and the 2-year-old is just plumb exhausted. Can I go in a little bit different direction here?
Sure.
Okay. There is a homeopathic remedy that's called Nux Vomica. I think that's just a godsend when there's been some type of a toxic residue from a virus. It's spelled N-U-X, first word. Second word is vomica. Sounds almost like vomit, but it's like V-O-M-I-C-A.
Yes.
And these things are really, really good when you have a little child that you're trying to help them get through something. And so I would give the child frequent baths, just let them soak a little bit, put a few drops of eucalyptus oil or something like that in the bathtub and just let them soak. The other thing that really pops in my head is the use of a substance called colostrum. Because colostrum is really, really good when the body's been severely irritated by a viral infection.
Okay.
And that's very easy to come by also.
Oh, okay.
Or at least I think it would be very easy to come by. So you've got everything from colloidal silver, which I think that's a very good call. I would be very fond of trying what's called elderberry. Okay. Sometimes you can find a combination of elderberry with ginger. Have you ever taken fresh ginger and root and run it through the juicer and tried to drink it down real fast?
Well, no, but I do make a tea out of it.
Good. You're super smart. But the little girl, if you'll do these things, the other thing that you might try doing is giving the little girl vitamin D drops. And you would give her more than what it would recommend on the label, but just for a few days, just enough to help her immune system turn the corner and get over all this stuff.
Okay.
But she's at home with Mama, right?
Yes. Yes, Mama missed some days of work, but yes.
Oh, I bet she did. Give her my very best. Tell her that she's a real trooper, and I'm very proud of her for taking such great care of her daughter.
Okay, thank you. Sure will.
You're welcome. I hope you'll have a good weekend. I'm so sorry about having to deal with all this.
Yes, sir. Thank you, and God bless you.
By the way, what's your grandmother's name?
Grandma Jane.
Okay, good. Good to know. Thanks. Have a good day, ma'am. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I thought you were going to say something like Gammy. Okay, let me read this to you real quick. I think I can get through. Well, no, I can't get through it. There's just not enough time. I'll give it a shot. The University of South Dakota Medical Center and Sioux Valley Hospital. Let me get to this. Anyway, she's just talking about reversing cervical cancer by consuming, here's the punchline, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts and kale, cruciferous vegetables. It said this study involved 30 women with stage 2 or stage 3 cervical cancer, and 10 of these women were given placebos, which means, let me say it this way. 10 were given a placebo, which means it had nothing in there that could actually change the cancer. 10 were given a compound called indole-3-carbinol, but that's found in broccoli. And 10 were given, 10 were given a small dose and 10 were given a larger dose. Anyway, after 12 weeks, 4 out of 8 women that were given a little bit, their cancer completely resolved and went away. That's unheard of. Anyway, this program is Health Essentials. I've enjoyed being with you today. Tune in next week here on KBJS FM 90.3 Jacksonville, Tyre, Longview.